handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Beck.
We're back, 25 minutes into hour two, and two fairly extensive visits with Terry Finley and Elliot Walden, getting us going on Derby Week. And I think we've got a similarly involved and interesting visit ahead with Rich Migliori, who joins us now. Meg, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve. How's everything going down there?
It's good. The first week flew by. And it's funny because, of course, this week, starting, frankly, at 11 here when they'll draw the Oaks, it'll just be a blur from here on in, especially after, you know, after tomorrow's draw. Then it's a rocket sled through Saturday night. But very good. They dodged some weather on Saturday. It wasn't terrible. And they had a nice opening night. And tomorrow they'll start. Derby Week racing, and everything seems to be in place.
Good, yeah. I'm looking forward to it. I'm working tomorrow, covering Churchill Downs from Belmont for Naira and Fox on America's Day at the Races, and I hope the weather cooperates this week. Rob Masiello, my son Joe, they got that horse Faya running in the sprint. And, you know, he won on soft ground at Laurel last fall, but he beat Maryland Breds, and he really didn't handle it. You could see he was struggling. He's a horse that really likes it firm. And, you know, against better horses, you'd be nervous that maybe he wouldn't, you know, be as successful. But he's such a nice horse, and he's been working up the storm, so I know they're really excited about that. They're going to be there. So I hope that the weather cooperates for them.
Well, I think they're okay. When's the race?
Friday.
Yeah, you should be all right. There's going to be a little rain apparently Wednesday and overnight into Thursday, and then we should be clear from that point.
I hope so. Yeah, because he's exciting. I mean, that horse is just so naturally fast, and you know Tommy Albertrani, he doesn't work his horses fast. Like you can see the video of it. The horse went like 59 about a week ago, and it looked like he was in a common canter. Good horses do that, right? You watch them work, and then only they're doing anything, and then you look down at the watch and go, whoa, they just did a lot more than you thought they did. So, it's kind of an exciting prospect for them.
And I'm glad you mentioned him because he burst on the scene last year, and it's funny how the kind of a phenomenon sometimes that a trainer that you wouldn't necessarily associate with a certain style of horse and distance, ends up, having a few of them sometimes at once, and Tom Albertrani and Turf Sprinters, you wouldn't necessarily make that connection right away. But Tommy had not just Fire, but there was another one. There's another good sprinter, Turf Sprinter, that he had the last year and a half.
He actually, that horse is a Godolphin horse that ran second to Fire in the race at Belmont.
There you go.
I can't remember his name off the top of it, but don't we tend to do that? Like we put labels on trainers and jockeys, but I think it just really kind of depends on the kind of horses you get to train and or ride. That kind of, Semin on the green. Yeah, Jean-Luc was terrific on the turf, but he also very, very good on the dirt as well. But, it was catchy. And as soon as he started winning on, some turf races, Semin on the green, for how long has Christophe Clement been, labeled? And, he only had a Belmont winner and, Tonalist. And, it just depends the kind of horses that you have access to.
No, it's true. And, I had this conversation last week with Phil D'Amato. And, he's now won, I think, his last nine more than graded stakes, but in particular the graded stakes, because that's what I looked up. all turf stake winners, and you know, obviously some are multiple. You know that Charmaine's Mia, but he's got like I think it was nine or maybe even 10 of his last 10 stake wins, graded stake wins, are all with turf horses. And and he made an interesting point, actually. He said, a lot of the owners that are involved in these horses, they don't have the same budget to spend. You know, and I just got off the phone with Terry Finley, who, you know, pioneered those two seven-figure purchases, those two yearling purchases from Saratoga in 19, million and a million and a half, you know, that are dirt horses. And Phil said, you know, my good owners can't spend for those type of horses. And so they're getting what they can for what they can afford. And they've been turf horses. So, and it's funny, the money that is offered in those graded stakes on grass, it's very much the same and similar to the money offered on those graded stakes on dirt.
Well, you know what's crazy to it? Cause how popular turf racing has got. And actually, boy, Browning with FaZe, he got a great idea to try to run a turf sale a few years ago. Didn't really work out. But see, when I started riding, my first summer in Saratoga, the summer before I started riding, and then the first summer I rode in Saratoga, they had no turf racing on weekends. No turf races at all on weekends. Because they would open up the infield and they would pull across the walkway across the turf course, and they couldn't keep taking it back and forth every race. So they just said, okay, no turf racing on weekends. Could you imagine that happening now with the popularity of turf racing now?
Yeah, no, it's not working. And they can't do what they do at Pimlico with the rolling, with those rolling bridges that wouldn't work. That's pretty funny.
I remember when Eddie Maple won the Jim Dandy on Willow Hour, and the walkway was across the turf courses, you know, and Willow Hour got to drifting out pretty severely the last 16th of a mile, and there was an inquiry and a claim of foul, and I remember Eddie Maple being on the phone saying, well, he caught the glare, the sheen from the sun off of that walkway that you guys put out there, basically laying the blame back at their feet, and they let it alone. They didn't take them down. And I remember thinking that was so brilliant because Eddie kind of talked his way out of getting DQ'd.
Yeah, pretty funny. I love it. Rich, there's a bunch of things that we need to cover. And actually, I know there's some things that's on your mind, too, which we'll get to. Let's do some racing stuff and maybe touch on a little Derby Oaks, too. But going back to the weekend, might as well start, in fact, with the first at Belmont on Saturday. How about our man Claude Ray and this West Point debut winner? And we shouldn't discount at all. Obviously, this is a very nice horse that he beat, this Mahamo of Shadwell's for Todd. And it's April, May, and we still have got quite a few obviously good 3-year olds that are going to be making the scene.
Well, absolutely. And you think back over the years, the second half of the year horses that, you know, came to four, most recently Arrogate, right? But, you know, you can go back to Wajima, who couldn't make the Triple Crown from my boss, Mr. Tomorrow, but wound up being 3-year-old champion, you know, with a, you know, basically running the table. I think he lost 1-4 in the fall, but to Forgo. And he also beat Forgo twice in the fall. So he definitely has the look of that second half of the year 3-year-old. What you have to love about that performance is how much he got out of that race, experience-wise. You know, they say a race is like five works. Well, that race...
completely forgot about that race.
Yeah, so, I mean, a really good weekend for them and some exciting prospects. And, you know, listen, we're all geared, especially this time of year. I mean, Kentucky Derby, classics, the horses that run further distances, but there's some awfully nice races for sprinters, you know, you're going to see a horse like that contend with. So they've got some really exciting prospects.
Yeah, this was a Munnings colt. that won The Bachelor, and partnered up. Marvin Delfiner is a partner. Is actually a Maryland bred. Interesting. I had completely, completely forgotten that. How about that? I think I had the fig, actually, because I went
Steve, you
can only, 94.
You must look at like 1,000 races a day between live racing and replays and historically. So don't be hard on yourself here. There's only so many hours in a day.
I know. Yeah, you're right. I'm not sure. I just, you know, yeah, the stuff I see live, hopefully that registers, and then the rest, you know, I go and review and watch. I actually wanted to sit down on Saturday afternoon, and you know, starting with our race at Gulfstream with Claude Ray, which was very promising. Did you see it? Very promising. We were thrilled with what he did there.
Yeah, I didn't get to see it, Steve. You know, I actually went back and forth to Belmont back home the last few days instead of staying down. So it kind of limits my, you know, by the time I get in, it's like 8:30 at night and you eat something and pass out, you know.
I hear you. Yeah, but when you get a chance, he's a turf horse. He's a turf miler, and it was his debut. He was a little taken aback by the kickback and by the whole experience, and he, you know, trailed early, and then he came running and made a huge middle move, faster than anybody in the group, and the only horse that finished faster was the winner. The winner was okay of Safi Joseph's, but came out of it fabulous and. We got a turf race picked out for him in about 3 weeks or so. So it was given that we had to really let this horse grow, a data link. We had to let him mature. He's 16-2, and you know, the work it takes to get, you know, kind of a, you know, the baby fat off of a big horse, and you know, we had a ankle surgery, took a little chip out, little tiny fleck. Susan Ditter. Who won yesterday, by the way. Congratulations to Susan. Won with a filly yesterday with Edgar. And happy as can be for her. It was a very productive weekend. Susan Ditter, you know, does a tremendous job. You know, she worked for Wayne Lucas. She worked for Todd. She worked for Kip Elser for many years, developing horses with Kip.
I love Kip. I spent a week down in Camden with Kip and, you know, going out with him every morning and training at the Camden Training Center. And I think the world of that guy. I mean, I just, what a tremendous horseman. And I'd be honest, I fell in love with Camden. I could see myself, you know, eventually having a place there and spending, you know, 4 or 5 months a year down there. 'Cause it's just,
look at you.
What a place for horses.
Let me slip in, get a couple of other results to talk about. And how about the feature on Saturday? Delighted for Lee Einsiedler, Lee's Casa Creed. And, you know, with Junior having been part of that three-horse tangle and spill, Pablo Fregoso and Junior and Manny, and Junior couldn't ride on Saturday, and Joe Bravo picks up the mount and gave Casa Creed a tremendous ride, I thought, to, you know, to get up and win. And that's a nice win for Casa Creed.
He gave him a tremendous ride. Casa Creed's very good. The way they finish, you know, when you're kind of dealt that hand, right, you're in behind horses in a slow pace. That's when you got to be more patient. That's when you've got to just say, okay, I got to sit in here and keep following, because mistake a lot of riders made, and you know, I made it at times during my career, is where they're going slow. I gotta get out and kind of make them quicken up, and you start going after them. So now the race speeds up in the middle while you're chasing wide. That's no way. You can't win turf races that way. You cannot win that way. So you have to be so much more disciplined and be more patient with a slow pace in turf racing. You understand the way I'm explaining it, right? Like, because some people like to have a hard time grasping that concept. Sit in there now and don't, because If you're the one who tips out, now you're wide going faster, you're done. Got no chance. So he sat in there. He made the corner, came out, got it done. And listen, you know, that was a very rough fall those guys took. And thankfully, all the horses are okay. And thankfully, it wasn't worse for any of them, because you're not going to see one that looks much worse. So, you know, as much as it's frustrating when you can't ride, you lose winners, I mean, Junior will be back sooner than, you know, before you know it, and he'll be fine. But I have one little pet peeve here. You just brought up Edgar Prado won a race, Joe Bravo riding like that wins a stake. You got Mike Smith out there. How do these guys keep doing this? I've been done for 11 years. I'm frustrated watching these. Well, all due respect to me, you know, I'm saying this, kidding around. These old guys still keep getting it done.
Well, at the same time, to be fair, you know, they're not dealing with, you know, with wire and poles and so forth in their neck and back. If you didn't have that to fight against, I know you'd probably still be out there.
Well, I said to Carmel, I said, you know, not too long, I said, it would have been nice to, like, win a nice race, you know, get off, give the horse a pat, pull the saddle off and say, all right, that's, you know, call it a day, boys, that's it. She goes, you were never going to do that. They were going to have to carry you out of there. It'll be, like, she's right. She's right. You know.
Yeah, she is. The stake as well on Friday, we should mention. Bank on Shea took control early, and Kendrick was not to be caught.
No, the complexion of the race completely changed when Winner's Laugh ran the doors and he hit his head. And he did create his own problem. You hear so many different things, and the stewards have a very difficult, thankless job to begin with. So you're going to get half the people agree with them, half not. He did charge the doors. He hit them, and then he did get tangled for a stride with the assistant starter, who was doing his best to get away from him. But if he didn't run the doors to begin with, he wouldn't have created his own problem. Just one of those bad timing situations. And then they raided the Jeffrey Englehart horse on the outside. His name's escaping me now. And when that happened, Kendrick, who always gets his position going forward, not necessarily has to put everything on the lead, but you're inside, you're going to come out running and make sure that at least the other speeds show up. And if they go on, they create separation. And when they didn't, now he just controlled things on the lead. And Norsh was very, very game. And it's funny because John Service's son, I remember him being a kid with Smarty Jones and being at Belmont. And, then, of course, he was narrowly defeated there. And to see now him training the stake winner, it's pretty cool to see that generations in this game that followed in his father's footsteps. So seeing it, like, I get a big kick out of Miguel Clement, who's assistant to his dad. Because, our kids grew up together. Joseph and Miguel grew up together. Joey was with them. They took Joseph to Europe racing. Miguel sleeping over our house in Saratoga. It's fun for me to watch that generational thing.
Bear with me a minute, Rich, because they've been saying that the Oaks draw was at 11, and maybe this is just preliminaries with Ed and Scott and Joe, but I want to make sure that they don't send it up to.
And you won't hurt my feelings if you got to go. Totally.
No, understand. No. We got some other things I want to do, but I'm just. I'll tell you that I just don't understand the. They tell you that things are going to be offered in one place on the website, for instance. And then, you know, you go to pull it up and it's not there. And so it's over on the Facebook page or it's over on the YouTube channel. It really is remarkable how often, they pull this. It's not a bait and switch, but it is annoying. I'll tell you that. You know, one horse you could talk about, Rich, while I poke around for this, looking at Bikini's performance, I think went a little under the radar on Saturday.
Who again, Steve? I didn't quite hear you.
Looking at Bikini's.
I'm drawing a blank. Where are we talking about now?
Looking at Bikini's, the Chad Brown that has got, you know, he's obviously, you know, the horse that is tough to keep, you know, to keep him sound. That was what, in the seventh? It was right before the, it was before the stake.
Okay. I'm catching up now.
That was the good group with Mijos and Wicked Trick and Super Stone Edge.
That horse was really good. I mean, he looked amazing in the post parade too. Oh my God. I completely drew a blank there for a minute. Got hit in the head too much, I think. But he made it look like if he can stay on track, he could be a player in a division that's looking for some horses to step up. Didn't it feel like, other than Mystic Guide, like the older horses are a little bit up for grabs at the moment?
Well, and the fact that you keep getting, you know, we each week, that one of the nicest parts of this is that we keep getting horses emerging. I mean, you know, Silver State over the winter, you know, peaking with that Oaklawn handicap, and out west actually too. They had Royal Ship, and actually Terry Finley talked about the horse, out of the Pampa Dispersal that they, or that was actually Windstar that they got involved in with the fractional. The first fractional offering, Country Grammar. They're suddenly coming out of the woodwork. It's kind of funny because it looked like there was a real shortage coming into the start of the year.
Yeah, I think that's true because, like, you know, we've been so focused, at least I have been, on the Philly and Mare division. It just, you know, continually seems to get deeper. That division is just so loaded. But I thought this was a great performance by Looking at Bikini's, just sitting in behind horses, always traveling when he tipped out. You know, he did it really well. Actually talked to Javier after that race, and you could tell he was very impressed with it too. And listen, Javier's a guy who's ridden some serious horses through his career. So when he's impressed, you got to, you know, give it even more credence.
And I'm just looking to pull up because I hadn't... I put up a bunch of figures for everybody over the weekend, and that was one that I did not check, and so now I'm curious. It's not except like an idiot. I forgot that we're not at Aqueduct. We're at Belmont now. It's we went a week early to Belmont. The good news is that Andy had an easy trip home. Actually, he was all excited that that the bus clicked and hit the subway, and he because it's so much harder to go from the city to Belmont than it is to go from the city to Aqueduct. 94 buyer for looking at Bikini's in there on Saturday,
and just the way he did it too. I mean, he did it well, moderate pace, and you know, he had, like, when he tipped out, the way he finished and looked good. And it didn't appear to me that Javier went all in on him either. You know, he kind of rode him with a lot of confidence. But, Andy, he got me pretty good the other day. I didn't realize they had switched out Acacia for Maggie on the set. And I was reporting. And, you know, sometimes it's hard to hear the throw. You have your IFB, but the volume was a little low. And I, you know, went on saying what I was going to say and said, you know, thanks, Acacia. And I kept saying Acacia, and it was Maggie. And I know, Andy just loved that. He couldn't help himself, had to jump all over that. So then they were calling me Gary, like I was Gary Stevens. But then yesterday when I took over, me and Greg Wolf were in the second shift on the set, and they did a really good thing. They kind of enclosed the set more. You're still outdoors, but they put up plexiglass to block a lot of the wind. And as anybody who's been in the Grandstand at Belmont early in the meet, it can be pretty darn cold up there. And they put some space heaters underneath. Well, I go to sit down in the chair. He's got an electric blanket. I'm like, come on, what are we doing here?
That's
my opportunity to give it back to him a little bit.
in the middle of the summer, it can be cold in that Belmont stand. I mean, it's John Nayrud explained years ago that they built it turned the wrong way, that the building should have been on the other side.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it blocks the sun, and it just you don't get the right exposure. That's the southern exposure, and and you think about this. Desjardins would have liked it if it was turned around. He wouldn't have those shadows.
Exactly. It's exactly right. Wouldn't have jumped the building, that little extension on the roof that Desjardins leaped over and opening the door for.
Steve, you know what I used to do in the winter when my boys were little? It'd be snowing out or we really couldn't be outside. I would take them to Belmont with, like, Joseph and Philip would have their bicycles. And I would get the big wheels for Luciano because he was little. And we'd go up, like, on the second floor in the grandstand. You know, like, it's just like a huge, like, airplane hangar. And they'd be in there riding their bikes. It'd be snowing out. I'd be pushing Luciano on his big wheels. Security come by. Oh, hey, Mig. They wave at me. Let us be. We used to have a blast in there. All my kids learned to ride their bikes at Belmont.
I love it. Rich, before this Kentucky Oaks draw, we got about. I see what they did. They had like a little 15-minute. They've got a little 15-minute pre-show before the draw, so the draw is about 5-6 minutes away. What's your coming out of the weekend? And of course, you guys had plenty of broadcasting, so I don't know how much workout show you've been able to see, but any feel here ahead of Monday, Tuesday, and the fields being assembled? Any feel for what's going to come up Friday, Saturday?
Yeah, I mean, I've got to watch all of them. We actually talked about several of them on the show, and I actually called Brad Cox. I thought Mandaloon is training exceptionally well. And just to talk about his effort or non-effort, in the Louisiana Derby. And then, watching Essential Quality, he doesn't dazzle you, and he's workmanlike, I think is the best way to put it, and his gallop outs are not, what we've come to expect from most, derby, prospects or, good horses. And I just asked him about that. It's like, because you have to know what's in character or out of character for a particular horse. He said, that's been him his entire life. He kind of just does what he needs to do, particularly in the mornings. Every rider that's worked him, he said he had Sean Bridgman work him, Florent Giroux worked him, Luis Saez, the exercise rider. They tell him anytime they want to take the workmate, they can take him. And it got me thinking about, some stuff. That's part of the reason why he's as good as he is, because not only is he physically gifted, but he's smart, and he waits on his rider. What do you want me to do? I'll do it. If you don't want me to do more, I don't need to do more. And horses like that stay healthier longer because they're easier on themselves and they're more manageable for a rider. So you can kind of ride them into position, put them in the game, sit, and they'll come back to you. They're not going to get rank on you. So, one of the things that people might be scratching their head going, I'm not crazy about his works because, frankly, I haven't been. But that's who he is. And I made a, yesterday on the show, I said if he was Allen Iverson, he would say, come on, guys, I'm 2-year-old champion. We're talking about practice. I'm the, undefeated. We're talking about practice. So, every horse is different. I like to see a little sparkle in works. It's something that I use to help point out who I think's coming into it good. But with this particular horse, I think maybe I was reading too much into it. I was really glad I had the opportunity to talk with Brad about it and get his take on it. And, you know, out of the horses that have caught my eye, I think two of Todd Pletcher's are really coming into this exceptionally well, and that's Known Agenda and Dynamic One. Very impressed with Dynamic One's gallop outs. Man, he just keeps getting ground. And you know the mile and a quarter, and certainly going forward, and Todd's record in the Belmont Stakes, the mile and a half of the Belmont, this is a horse that I think is going to be reckoned with at some stage, if not the Derby, the Belmont, particularly the way he's training. Not very few negatives that I saw, but like I said, I kind of had to clarify for myself. And Brad Cox was great. I texted him, I know you're getting pulled in a million directions, but if you have a minute, I really, would love to talk to you. And 10 minutes later, he called me. And you know, when you get that kind of response, because what we're doing, Steve, what you're doing with the radio show, what we're doing with TV, we're trying to bring people inside our game. We're trying to educate. We're trying to promote it. We're trying to, get people interested and create more fans. And the fans we do have, providing them with insights and, maybe some little nuggets of education they've never gotten before. So when you have a trainer that obviously is, swamped with stuff, get back to you like that, it helps us do our job better and, in essence, helps the game. So I just appreciate and admire that he got back to me as quickly as he did, because I know he doesn't have a lot of time, or spare time, I should say.
Well, and that's true of, of so many, so many of the horsemen, because there'll be events. I mean, it's not as event-laden this year, and of course, September even less so, but, under normal circumstances, on a daily and nightly basis, there's one thing after another. There's fundraisers, and there's the trainer's dinner, and there's, so many different things. The Kentucky, one of the Kentucky groups which of the Kentucky groups, they've got typically a very fun dinner that's a roast. There's just one thing after another. I mean, then there used to be, just some traditional parties that would assemble some of the trainers. John Ease for years would have a trainer's dinner as well, which was a lot of fun. So there's so many different things that they're asked to do, and everybody does it. I mean, they whether it's phone calls for like you're talking, or whether it's appearances, etc. They're very generous, and everybody knows that it's time well spent, because players and fans are eager to hear from them.
Yeah, and again, knowing the pressures that they're under, and I would say 98% of the guys are great that way. Also timing's everything too. You walk into, my brother Michael represents Dylan Davis, who's actually right now at the specialist to find out a timeline when he might be able to get back. He's been feeling good, so hopefully he'll be back soon. My brother, he went into a trainer's barn, 10:30 in the morning about a particular horse. This was over a year ago now, before the pandemic. And, he left the barn. He called me, "This guy, he talked to me like this. Who does he think he is?" And I said, "Well, wait a second. You don't know what might have just happened. I mean, he might have had his best horse come up sick or lame, or, something happened. An owner just pulled horses out of the barn." You can't judge a person just off of that one interaction without knowing what might have happened over the last half hour, particularly as tough as, our game can be, and horses are like strawberries, they can go bad overnight, right? So, I'm not going to bring the name up, but it's a trainer that I'm a friend of, we're close. And I talked to him later in the day, and I was like, "Hey, what's going on?" And sure enough, a very good horse of his got injured late in the morning. And he had just gotten off the phone with the owner. And then my brother comes in, with a clear head. "Hey, what's going on? When are we going to run that horse?" And the guy's short. You got to give people a little bit of a break. Timing's everything,
No doubt. Well, speaking of timing, let's watch, Rich. You can listen in, and you can help me with the the instant reaction to the draw as soon as. They've brought Ken McPeak up, and they're talking to Kenny. So this could go a while. It's hard to.
Well, I was hoping to get a hike in today, Steve.
Hang in there. You got to hang in. You'll be hiking. You'll be hiking. I'm just watching, and Case can pot it up, because I know there's a couple of things I know we wanted to touch on, and I'll take the opportunity actually to update people too from Friday after we had Chris Katulak with us to talk about the Fonner force out pick five, and I'll give those results at some point before we wrap up today. It was worth trying. The story involving Conquest Big E ended up with a very happy ending, as the connections that had entered him agreed to a private purchase rather than running him for the $3,500. And so Donna Keen, who was in her Remember Me rescue group, and Donna does a fabulous job, and the team from Midwest Thoroughbreds helped her a couple of years ago, really expand her rescue ranch, as it were. And so that story had a happy ending. And at the same time, Rich, it's a difficult topic, because you don't necessarily want to legislate to people that their property, how they should. How their horse, should be utilized. Let's listen in downstairs across the way to the Kentucky Oaks draw, and we'll see how the 14 fillies line up. Let's, Case, pop that up.
Good morning, everyone. Travis Stone for Churchill Downs, and welcome to the post-draw for Friday's 146th Kentucky Oaks. It's good to be back doing this in the springtime, 147th, plus one. Still stuck on last year. 14 fillies to go postward in the race on Friday. It's arguably one of the most competitive Oaks we've seen in quite some time. Very deep, a lot of good horses. Been the chief steward of the Kentucky Derby since 2012. Next to her is Mike Anderson,
it's
the
up
new
and
president
loud on this end,
of
Steve.
Churchill Downs. He's the 14th president in the history of this home of the Derby. And next to Mike is Neil Curtis, who is corporate counsel. He's here in case things really get interesting as we work our way through the draw. At the table to my left, your right, is Ben Huffman and Dan Bork. Ben is the vice president of racing here at Churchill Downs. He puts together the races, and Dan Bork, alongside of him, is the stakes coordinator and assistant racing secretary. All the stakes races we have this week and throughout the year, Dan responsible for putting those together. As we said, 14 fillies going postward in the Oaks. As we draw the pill sheet and the pill and the entry sheet, the silks will be hung to my left, your right, by Alex Frankie, the reigning Miss Kentucky. She'll hang the silks as we pull the horses for Friday's Oaks. And with that, let's do it.
Number
12. 12, search results, Irad Ortiz.
Number 12, search results comes from the Eclipse Award-winning duo of Clarvitz Stables and Chad Brown. They will also start highly motivated in Saturday's Kentucky Derby. She's one of a few undefeated fillies in this year's Oaks. Chad Brown's only prior Oaks starter, Lewis Bay, ran third in 2016. In her prep race, she won the Gazelle, just like search results, number 12.
Number 10.
10, Malathat, John Velasquez.
Number 10 is Malathat for John Velasquez and Todd Pletcher. It's a word that actually means good feelings or pleasure. She's an undefeated daughter of Dreaming of Julia, who was fourth in the Kentucky Oaks back in 2013. Todd Pletcher has called her, quote, a star leading into this year's race. Malathat, number 10.
Number Number seven.
Seven, Ava's Grace, David Cohen.
Number seven is Ava's Grace with David Cohen. Trainer Robertina Diodoro is also projected to start Keep Me in Mind in Saturday's Kentucky Derby. Ava's Grace has never been worse than third in career and was only a length behind Pauline's Pearl in her first start going two turns last time out. David Cohen, the rider, will also ride Keep Me in Mind in the Derby. That is Ava's Grace, number seven.
Number two.
Two, Maracuja, Kendrick Carmouche.
Number two is Maracuja. It's been quite a run for jockey Kendrick Carmouche, who won his first grade one last fall in the Cigar Mile, and he'll now be riding Maracuja in Friday's Kentucky Oaks, and he also has a mount in the Derby on Saturday. Maracuja, number two.
Number nine.
Coach Luis Saez.
Number nine is Coach Luis Saez, trained by Brad Cox. Luis Saez, of course, will ride the likely favorite in Saturday's Derby, Essential Quality. Coach is only one of three horses in this year's Oaks to have won a race here at Churchill Downs. Her owner, Rick Heber, has been involved in several racing partnerships throughout the year, but decided to buy some yearlings a few years ago, and Coach was one of them. His son, Luke, works for Brad Cox as well. Coach, number nine.
13.
13, Competitive Speed, Chris Landeros.
Number 13 is Competitive Speed, trained by Javier Gonzalez, who won his first grade one in Puerto Rico 8 years ago and is seeking his first grade one here in North America. Competitive Speed was bought for a mere $5,000 and has amassed more than $100,000 in earnings since. Churchill and Kentucky regular Chris Landeros with the ride, post 13, Competitive Speed.
Number eight.
Eight, Miraz, Flavian Pratt.
Number eight, Miraz, for Michael McCarthy, who is a two-time Graded Stakes winning trainer here at Churchill Downs, and he was involved in three Kentucky Oak winners when he worked with Todd Pletcher, Ashado, Rags to Riches, and Princess of Sylmar. Around the barn, Miraz is, quote, all business and very classy. She won her maiden race by 11 lengths. That is Miraz, number eight. And that means we've drawn seven. We'll take a brief break and draw the final seven after this.
Yeah, there's half your field, Rich. And
first seven.
We're waiting, of course, for, I suppose, with search results and Mallet, that seem like the two principals. You do have Travel Column yet, and Crazy Beautiful, probably, and Clairier, Milfay. And then Will's Secret, I suppose. Interesting. There's still some nice real estate, actually. The 3, 4, 5, 6 yet to be drawn. Any issue there for search results being somewhat wide? The 12, I mean, it's a mile and an eighth. Not that quick to the turn.
No, I mean they do have enough run to the turn, and she's pretty handy. I don't think there's really any negatives. You know, when we talk about post positions, you hate to be too far out or, dead on the inside. But I think it's less important in the Oaks as it is in the Derby because, obviously 20, being basically on the outside fence and having to deal with, being that far out, even though you have more of a run to turn, or being down on the inside where you're breaking right on the, elbow of the turn there, right? The chute comes out and you can kind of get jammed inside where they're breaking on a complete straightaway, the mile and an eighth. So, you're not contending with some of the things you have to contend with in the Derby. So, I don't think it's as important when you speak about those little pitfalls that you have to deal with breaking out of that little chute. But, the one thing that worries me about Chad Philly is that she hasn't changed leads her last two starts, and listen, she won and you can't knock her, obviously super talented, but she had changed leads perfectly in her first race. And then when she didn't with Javier the second time, I actually went and talked to Irad about it. And he said, no, she, you just got to help her a little bit, but she's fine. And then you could see in the Gazelle, he tried twice, like really tried to get her to switch, and she absolutely had no part of it and stayed on her left lead. Against, as you face better and better competition, is that something that's going to hurt you somewhere along the way? So
here we are.
The one question.
Let's go back. Here's the last seven.
Milfoy, Joel Rosario.
14 is millefeuille. Post 14 is a French word for a type of dessert pastry, Jeanbon Farm homebred. They will also start Mandaloon in Saturday's Kentucky Derby. Hall of Fame trainer Bill Mott was the all-time leading trainer at Churchill Downs for more than 31 years and is seeking his first Kentucky Oaks. Millefeuille, 14.
Number five.
Five, Pass the Champagne, Javier Castellano.
Number five is Pass the Champagne for trainer George Weaver, who's a Louisville native and a former assistant. Kentucky Oaks winning trainers Dwayne Lucas and Todd Pletcher. This is his first Kentucky Oaks starter. Pass the Champagne is, and I quote, a slow walker around the barn, but a fast runner. That's Pass the Champagne, number five.
Number one.
One, Pauline's Pearl, Ricardo Santana.
The inside post, number one, to Pauline's Pearl with Ricardo Santana Jr. Since Ricardo and Steve Esmussen have teamed up since 2013, 57% of Ricardo's wins have come with Steve. Quite the powerful duo. They've won more than 769 races together over the past 8 years. Pauline's Pearl won the Fantasy at Oaklawn Park last time, the same race that Rachel Alexandra won, en route to her Oaks victory. That is Pauline's Pearl, number one.
Number four.
Four is Crazy Beautiful, Jose Ortiz.
Number four, Crazy Beautiful with Jose Ortiz. Three-time Kentucky Oaks runner-up Ken McPeak seeking his first Kentucky Oaks victory. He was second last year with future Preakness winner, Swiss Skydiver. Jose Ortiz won the Kentucky Oaks with Serengeti Empress back in 2019. Crazy Beautiful, number four.
11.
11, Will's Secret, John Court.
This is Dallas Stewart's sixth Kentucky Oaks starter with number 11, Will's Secret, this year. He won the Kentucky Oaks back in 2006 with Lemons Forever, who paid a record $96. John Court, 60 years old, will attempt to become the oldest Kentucky Oaks winning jockey, eclipsing Kerwin Clark, who won it back in 2015. Woo-hoo. Will's Secret, number 11.
Number six.
Six, Travel Column, Florent Giroux.
Number six is Travel Column for the two-time Kentucky Oaks winning duo of Brad Cox and Florent Giroux. They, of course, won it with Monomoy Girl and She Dares the Devil. Travel Column is undefeated here at Churchill Downs. She broke her maiden on Oaks Day last year and then went on to win the Goldenrod. She's trying to become the third horse to win the Goldenrod and the Oaks. The other two, Rachel, Alexandra, and Silver Bullet Day. Travel Column, number six.
And the three,
Clairier, Tyler Gaffleon.
What number is that?
Number three is Clairier.
Number three is Clairier, the all-time leading trainer at Churchill Downs. Steve Esmussen is also a two-time Oaks winning trainer. His first win came in 2005 with Summerlee and then again with Untappable in 2014. That is Clairier, number three. Tyler Gaffleon won all three riding titles here last year at Churchill Downs. So with that, we have drawn all 14 post positions. We'll take another brief break, get the morning line odds from Mike Battaglia, share those, and we'll be set to go for the 147th Oaks. Be right back.
There's your 14. Pauline's Pearl, Maracuja, Clairier in the 1-2-3. Crazy Beautiful, the 4. Pass the Champagne, the 5. Travel Column, 6. Ava's Grace, 7. Moraz for Michael McCarthy. The 8, Coach, the 9, one of the two Cox. So Cox has got two in both the Derby and the Oaks. Malathat, the 10 for Todd Pletcher. And the 11, the very nice, it's a nice horse of Dallas's, Will's Secret. And there's another one of those older jocks, Rich, John Court, still doing it.
I thought of that. When there's a 60-year-old John Court, I'm like, come on, give me a break.
Right. You've also got Search Results in the 12, Competitive Speed the 13, and Milfay in the 14. There's your field. We'll watch for the odds. Let me just grab a screen cap of the field. There we go. All right. It's a nice group. It does seem that there's a couple here. I mentioned Malathat, and you expanded your thoughts on search results, which I appreciate. Then there's that other group I'd forgotten in listing the ones that we were waiting for. Past the champagne, that a lot of people feel with a better time bride could have potentially have won the Ashland.
Yeah, I'm not really of that opinion myself. We criticize riders so often for not being aggressive or being passive, and then, we want to criticize them when they are aggressive, and I don't know. I think we're splitting hairs there. He made a decision. It was his decision. I'd rather a rider, if he's going to make a mistake ultimately, if it's conceived as or perceived as a mistake, then at least it was of his own volition and there was a thought process behind it. I have a much harder time forgiving passivity when a guy, lets other guys make up his mind for him. So I'm not one of the people that really thought that was an ill-judged ride, but personally.
And it took a monster. I mean, this Malathat it took a big effort from her. I mean, she's going to be potentially your favorite here. Let's get the odds as well.
50-1 on the morning line odds. Number 3, Clairiere, 5-1. 5-1 for Clairiere. Number 9, Coach, 50-1. 50-1 on Coach. Competitive Speed, 50-1. Drew Post 13. Post 13, Competitive Speed, 50-1. Crazy Beautiful, number 4, 15-1. 15-1 on Crazy Beautiful, number 4. Malathat from Post 10 is the morning line favorite for the Kentucky Oaks at 5-2. 5-2 on Malathat for the Oaks. Number 2, Maracuja, 20-1. Maracuja, 20-1 on the morning line odds. Number 14, Millefeuille, 20-1. 20-1 on number 14, Millefeuille in the Oaks. 8, Miraz, 30-1. Number 8, 30-1. Number 5, Pass the Champagne, 15-1. 15-1 on number 5, Pass the Champagne. Pauline's Pearl, who drew the rail, is 20-1. Pauline's Pearl, 20-1. Number 12, Search Results, is 3-1. Co-second choice. Number 12, Search Results, 3-1. Co-second choice with number 6, Travel Column, who's also 3-1. Travel Column number 6 is 3-1. And 11, Will's Secret, is 30-1 for the Oaks. 30-1 and number 11, Will's Secret. So to recap, the morning line favorite for this year's Oaks is Malathat at 5-2. Co-second choice, Search Results, and Travel Column, they're both 3-1. Just a little bit of race day information for you so you can get tuned in for the Oaks on Friday.
There it is,
of course, Friday,
Rich,
April 30th.
Indeed, Malathat 5-2, Search Results and Travel Column makes sense. I'll tell you what, Pass the Champagne, 15-1, awfully attractive. And, that's the first price that seems to be appealing. Clairiere, 5-1. Crazy Beautiful is going to have her backers as well.
You know, one of the things that jockeys think about, Steve, with, post position draws, I think some of the ones that are like more towards the middle probably are happy with that. But, it's something I think the general public doesn't think a lot of is, they have a split load. So they start 1-8, 2-9, 3-10, so on and so forth through the whole field. I know I always thought about it, I would prefer to be late in the split, meaning if you're number one, you're waiting longer for everybody else, and just more opportunity for something to go wrong in the gate or for your horse to get distracted or, lose a little bit of their edge. So, if I've got post 6 or 7, I was thrilled because I know I'm later in the split, less time in the gate, limit, the opportunity for, something negative to happen.
No, it's a great point. And, it's funny, years ago, when two years ago, the last time you had the auxiliary gate, that was part of the, part of the topic too. And that, if you wanted to be, you know, in that spot, between 14 and 15, you know, there would be, you know, the little extra room, you know, that used to come up. But they'll load in pairs, the one in the eight, the two in the nine, the three in the, yeah. And it, you know, 14 horse field, there's probably a few of these horses, you know, other than, you know, maybe a stake here or there, Rich, that, you know, that haven't had to wait, you know, that long. And certainly when it comes to Derby, and they do a great job, make no mistake, that gate crew does a remarkable job, but it can, you know, it can get held up. And so being back behind the gate as horse 8, 9, 10, or 18, 19, 20, while there's, somebody throwing themselves around in there, that's a positive.
No, absolutely. You know, and again, these are like things that you like to let people in on. You maybe never thought of that. Wow, as a jockey, you think like that. I remember riding Friends Lake, who was very, very bad gate horse in the Kentucky Derby, and hit. There was a deluge with Smarty Jones that year, and there was water running from the crown of the track right through underneath the horses, like right through their legs, between their front legs and their hind legs. And we got in the gate, and Friends Lake was tricky. If he kind of flipped the switch, it was going to be bad, and he could tear up a starting gate. He could hurt himself, hurt you, hurt the starter. So we get in there, and I had talked with the assistant starter about him. Like, we got to handle him with kick gloves, because if he turns, we're not going to get him back. He'll lose his temper, and he started pawing at the water that was going in between his legs, like just splashing at it. And the guy went to like kind of, hey, you know, and I was like, no, let him be. We were like post three, and it was a bunch of, let him be. I said, it's distracting him. It's good. And he was slapping the water until they yelled one out. Cause then even the communication in a big field for the assistant starters to the starter, particularly with the Derby Day crowd normally, and that they can, you know, hear each other and communicate so well. It's remarkable the job they do. The assistants and the starter, the whole crew. And when they yelled one out, that, you know, telling us that there was one horse left to load, I was like, okay, now let's square him up. For the minute and a half, 2 minutes, whatever it was to load, he was just pawing at the water. And it was the greatest thing, because I just didn't want him to tear up the starting gate.
That's pretty funny. I've never heard you tell that story before. That's great.
Yeah. He ran terrible, though. His day was the Florida Derby, and then he ran poorly in the Derby, and we kind of backed up and went to the Peter Pan, and I thought he was going to run big that day. He was traveling nice in the back set, and he let go of the bridle, and then he was retired. So, but at least he gave us a Florida Derby. But he was tough that way. And then I heard them say about the Goldenrod. You know, I won the Goldenrod from Mark Cassie in, like, 1984, 83 or 84. We went with a filly named Kamikaze Rick for Erwin Finer was the owner. And we flew their commercial. It was a horrible day. Snow, sleet, rain. And she won 8 lengths. She galloped. And now all the flights were canceled. And Mr. Finer had celebrated a bit in the trustees room at Churchill. And he decided we're getting out of here. So he made some phone calls, and a private jet would leave. So we went to the other side of the airport. He got the private jet. We get on the jet, and we started playing gin rummy, he and I, for $1 a point. And by the time we landed in Farmingdale at the Republic Airport out there, he owed me like $5,000 or $6,000. But he was... Again, he had celebrated, and he couldn't hold his hand up. So I'm looking at both hands. I'm playing with both hands. So we walk out of the plane, and there's a car to pick us up and take us home. And he said, okay, what do I owe you? And I said, well, whatever it was, $5,000 or $6,000. And he pulled out a huge lot of cash. And I said, Mr. Finer, I can't take your money. I said, I was looking at your hand the whole time, you know. And he goes, what, you don't think I didn't know that you couldn't beat me otherwise? And he made me take the money.
That's great. That's tremendous.
Yeah, and then Kamikaze Rick got sold to Ted Savarese. Yeah, for, with What's his name? My man there.
Parasella.
Trainer
to the stars.
Yes, so he's got the horse. I get to ride the horse twice, wins twice. I got the call and the test. And the morning of the entry, I go by John's barn, and I could see he's avoiding me. Like, he ducked out the other side of the barn on the Oklahoma track. And he used to go every day to Mother Goldsmith's for breakfast. And I couldn't catch him all morning, and I go, something's up. I'm getting a bad feeling here, right? So I go to Mother Goldsmith's to see, you know, catch him there. And he's there having breakfast with his jockey agent, Teddy Margavero. And I could see he's uncomfortable. So he says, John, what's going on? We entered the big filly today. I think I'd won 4 out of 5 on her in her career. And she got beat by Verbality, and she came out of that race 6. The only time she had lost up to that point. And he was like, well, listen, I got bad news. And this is when they play each other. You know, the owner, Mr. Sabarese, gave the call to Angel Cordero. It's not me, you know. And I'm like, come on, John, this is, you know, and I got mad and I blew my temper. I really blew my temper, you know. And she finished 4th, I think, in the test, and then she came back and won the Gazelle. If I had just shut my mouth, I would have probably got her back for the Gazelle, but I didn't burn that bridge. I just detonated it. But
that was the bridge over the River Kwai.
No, it was, too. I mean, I wired it and hit that baboom.
So crazy. That's great. Well, and Parasella, of course, the original crazier than a rat in a coffee can.
You know what, John? John had he's still alive. Great heart. Like, it's so funny because I know he felt bad about it afterwards, and we didn't talk for a while. Like, I was really mad. Like, I'm not saying I was right. I just kind of lost it, and so about maybe a year and a half, 2 years later, I was in a dogfight with Jose Santos, the leading rider at Aqueduct, and kind of had run out of ammunition. Like, a lot of my horses were just used up, tired, and it looked like I was going to get beat. And John had entered 3 horses that were all, like, favorites. And John knew how to win. And he actually took all 3 of the riders off of those horses and paid double jock's mount and put me on those horses, and he made me leading rider. So it was his way of making up for what happened. And, you know, who does that? I mean, you know, it wasn't like it was lost on him that, like, well, you know, too bad you got taken over. So, you know, when somebody has that kind of generosity of heart, you have to appreciate it, too.
No doubt. That's a great coda to that story. I always love hearing these for the first time. These are all new to me, so it's great.
Yep.
Rich, a couple of minutes to wrap up, and I will get you for a Thursday or Friday. You know, when we do our you know, lightning round of final decisions, and I'll put out the whole master list of everybody's Derby Oaks selections. So we'll save that for that. But you know, a couple of other topics too. I know that you had some things on your mind this morning.
Well, yeah, you know, especially when I'm driving back and forth, right? I have 100 miles each way to work and home, and things I think about in our industry, and things that I just feel like maybe we missed the mark or we should do better. And, you know, so much talk about riding crops and different things. Listen, I want what's best for the horses, but making decisions to, you know, and I've used this word last week, to placate, you know, outside interests that honestly they can't be placated. They drew us into a war that we didn't want, and they're experts at guerrilla warfare, you know, witnessed by how they've conducted themselves and done things in the past. So every time you try to do something to, you know, compromise and show them that, like, we're making an effort to do things better, and we should always strive to do things better, but not for the optics for them, because every time you give them that inch, you've just lost an inch in the war that they've drawn you into. And you can't, you know, if you're going to deal with these people, you've got to deal with them on their level, and you can't give them any credibility. And I started thinking about the things that people don't know, and you start comparing horses and the horses that we work with, you know, they get massaged daily. How many massages you get a year? They somebody makes their bed for them every day and turns it down at night for them. Their meals are brought to them. They get manicures, pedicures constantly, right? Their shoes are trimmed. Their feet are trimmed. Their new shoes. They get new shoes at least once a month. I don't get new shoes once a month. They have a personal valet who attends to their every need. They have a personal trainer who makes sure that they get the exercise they need. A nutritionalist, a chiropractor. They get, you know, chiropractic work all the time.
Yep.
Some of them, you know, acupuncture. You know, and these are the things that, like, if you were to equate or compare the way our horses are treated, handled, and not to say we shouldn't continue to strive to do better, compared to the people, I mean, it's incredible, and I don't think we do a good job of making people see that or understand it completely. Mm-hmm. You know, it's easy to say, well, we love our horses. It goes deeper than that. Listen, I'm still, my daughter's pony's still going, and I've been battling for 3 months and keeping her happy as possible. And she's, you know, she's hanging in, and as long as she keeps having good days, I'm going to continue to make sure that, you know, I give her everything I can to keep her comfortable, happy. Why? All it is at this point is because I love her and because of what she means to our family. She's a part of the family. But, you know, to hear people that have heard one narrative, that have been educated improperly by guerrilla organizations, you know, you would think that we all just, you know, are in this for money and horses are disposable. Well, they're not. And I know the money I've gone through trying to save a 31-year-old half Welsh, half thoroughbred pony. And you know what? Carmella was out there yesterday when the sun came out. It was nice. And just had her out in the back pasture, grooming her. And you could see she was loving the attention. So I just get really frustrated and tired of the fact that I'm part of a group of people that have a love and shared interest and passion for horses, and yet we're portrayed in a way that is completely false. But it's the narrative that gets pushed, and that people that don't, you know, get the opportunity to see what it really is, just believe that narrative. And we need to combat that in a different way than we've been doing. We need to step up and be proactive, not reactive. We've done a, I think, as an industry in a whole, myself included, you know, something happens, and then you're running, you're on a defensive,
reactive
posture. Yeah. You're reacting, and you're not. So we got to go on the offensive. And you know, when you get an organization that puts down healthy animals because, you know, these cats and dogs, because it doesn't, you know, fit into what they're doing, what they're really doing, and nobody talks about that. You know, tens of thousands of healthy animals get put down immediately, not even an opportunity for them to be adopted out or find new homes, and that's ethical? Wait a second. Well, I had to actually go back because I, you know, somebody called me out that I don't have a lot of education. That was my tweet last night that was addressing that, and then the guy took his tweet down. I actually went back and looked up ethical. There's nothing ethical about that. So we've got to stop, I think, trying to embrace and placate these organizations and say, no, this is what we do, and we do it well. And, of course, continue. Somebody not doing things properly, they got to be gone. There's no wiggle room. There's no nonsense. You're gone. As far as crops go, common sense, people. Just you know when a horse is done and a guy's overriding them or hitting them, you sit him down for a month. You don't play. A guy's winning by 10 and he does that, then you fine him huge because it's supposed to be an aid to help you get the desired response from a horse. There's a line where it goes from being an aid to being punishment. If a guy goes over that line, then you hit them with the hammer of Thor. But to say, you know, well, the optics of it, and if you hit more than three times, and I just don't get what you're doing. All you're doing is superficial. You're really not getting to the heart of the stuff that really need to be looked at. And then again, getting the message out there of actually what goes on with these horses on the backstretch, the grooms. We got to tell this story better.
There's no question. And it's funny that the timing of you bringing this up, because today at thoroughbredracing.com, Daniel Ross, who has been an exercise rider in the West Coast and has done some very nice work for both TRC, Thoroughbred Racing Commentary, as well as, of course, at TDN. And I think very highly of Daniel's work. And he's been on, he's been on with us. He's got a piece that went up today at thoroughbredracing.com, Racing Social License to Operate, the Evolution of Public Attitudes. And there's it's worth reading. There's some problematic suggestions and elements to it, including bringing up a paper by a University of Kentucky animal and food science department senior lecturer, Cami Halesky, and a paper that covers the changing the issue, the changing views of animal animal activities from from zoo to the aquarium concept to circus, et cetera, and racing. And one of the things in it that Ross cites as being, quote, instructive for the industry, that it breaks down five common areas of concern among the public: worries about fatal breakdowns and overlap with safety of racetrack services, whip use, drug policies, life cycles of horses, and concern over the racing of two-year-olds. Now, for me, I hear that, and my head explodes. I go berserk, because it's a litmus test for people that know nothing, that know absolutely nothing. When these people say, well, maybe we shouldn't race them until they're three. Good. Go ahead and do that, and they'll be breaking down twice as fast, twice as many, and in droves. Because the only way to get them sound and healthy and to have their greatest chance at a career is to stress them early for the strength of bone. And anybody who brings up this about two-year-old racing, I mean, I don't know if you quietly explain this to them, that a century of research on the topic backs it up. But when they start with that, I personally just, my alarm bells go off, that this is somebody that doesn't have a clue as to what they're talking about. And but yet we have to explain it, that we're actually doing better by the horse by getting them prepared for their careers at two.
Well, that's exactly it. And that's my first reaction too. Like, here's somebody who knows absolutely zero about the topic, but they're eschewing this idea that is completely false. And the science is there to back it up. But again, that's when we have to take the breath and try to make people understand, and not maybe in response to people saying these things, but out in front, before. These are one of the things that need to be out there. The knowledge has to be readily available, as much as the propaganda that they put out is readily available. Our facts have to be readily available. But, that's the only way we're ever going to try to get people to really understand this. The way Alan Jerkins used to say it to me, and go back to his barn at feed time: they don't make Olympic champions, let them sit on the couch eating chocolate chip cookies. You've got to, again, it's a process, and it's not, these are the things, honestly, when I'm driving, I'm constantly thinking about and how we have to do a better job of getting the right information out and the facts out, and just how, one of the things that so many things have improved. But one of the things that is, you know, like horses, you know, life cycle, and what's gone on over the last 20 years with thoroughbred retirement, yeah, and acknowledging that we needed, you know, to address what happens to horses when their racing days are over, horses that aren't going to go on to a breeding career, how thoroughbreds have infiltrated all different disciplines, you know, from show jumping to dressage to therapy for riders, you know, riders that need therapy, and all these different things that thoroughbreds are so good at. And we've met that head on, and we've done great strides. What we haven't done, I think, is get the message out as good as it can be put out. I you know, we constantly do pieces on it, but I think somehow we've got to open it up where the public gets to see this firsthand. I get so frustrated at that because I, you know, was involved with TRF on the board for years. You know, Michael Blowen and I are good friends, with old friends. I would go to Wallkill Correctional Facility. We have 50 horses there, and speak with the prisoners, and go to the farm part with them. Go to Adam Coglanese at NYRA and get wind pictures. I'd get the list of the horses at Wallkill, and I would get wind pictures from them when they were running at Belmont Aqua Saratoga.
Oh, wow. Nice.
Right? So you go there, and you're talking to a guy who's rubbing a 17-year-old horse, and go, hey, here's your horse when he was 3, winning in Saratoga. You ought to see the impact and the expression. Wow. and the appreciation.
Nice.
You know, so, and then to be lumped in and portrayed as somebody who doesn't care, who doesn't, you know, who's callous. I mean, it's an absurdity. And I'm just so freaking tired and frustrated with that narrative that we've got to fight back. We got pulled into a war we didn't want with an enemy that has only one agenda. And that's to do away with our industry, do away mm-hmm. with our sport. And they've been successful in other areas because I don't think they had the benefit of learning by watching what happened to those industries. We do. And we've got to get stronger about this, and we've got to come up with a comprehensive plan to combat it and beat it back, because we're talking about an industry, a game that we all love, and horses that we all love. And what happens then? All these horses that are bred and have life and have these wonderful lives, actually, vast majority, are now, so they'll just cease to exist because they're not mm-hmm. necessary. This nonsense that, well, horses would be better off out in the wild. What, you don't think that they don't die horrific deaths in the wild? Horse gets injured, he's picked off by predators, he's disemboweled, he's eaten alive. Horses, you know, the parasites they have to deal with, starvation, fighting for territory with other stallions and getting beat up, getting kicked, and then having an infection and dying a long, slow, horrible death. That narrative does not go. I've got horses in my back here. I saw a horse one day last year. He's running around having a great time in the back paddock. He slipped. He fell down. He got caught up under the fence. If I'm not there, I had to run, get a sledgehammer and knock the boards out so I can get him out from being cast under the fence. If he's out in the wild and he gets caught up by that, what happens to him, Steve? So this, enough with the nonsense. Let's talk facts and stop giving any credibility to these people that are, have one agenda, and that's to do away with what we do.
Yeah. It's funny. Last night, well said, Rich, on all fronts. Last night we had this dinner party, John Nichols had a lovely get-together at his condo, and this came up, actually, more on the crop side, and you know, about, you know, all the negatives associated with, you know, with giving into this, and you know, the questions as to, I mean, what they're even going to do at Monmouth right now. It's...
Yeah. Listen, you want to make meaningful change that make things better, I'm on board. And again, I say this with complete purity in my heart. We always need to improve. We always need to make it better. It's never going to be perfect. What is perfect? But we're always going to strive for that perfection. But to change something like that because of optics, it drives me nuts because it's so absurd. You know, you've got a cracked window. Your windshield shattered on your car, and you're worried about squeegeeing it so that it's you know, you got a little speck of dirt. I mean, what are we doing here? Stop with that, well, it's public perception and the optics, and make change that actually is meaningful. And I'm on board with all of that. And again, we just haven't really gotten the message out. You know, you think about the strides that have been made with racetrack surfaces and yep. Thoroughbred retirement, veterinarian care, everything that we've done, we just have not, I don't believe anyway, done a good enough job of getting that message out, and we're getting run over with propaganda, and we've got to stop and understand that we're fighting an enemy that's mercenary. They'll put people, undercover to take videos, create yep. friendships and make videos. Come on.
Correct.
How mercenary do you have to see them be before you catch on that they are going to do whatever they can to do away with what with our way of life?
Yeah, that's precisely it, and beautifully said, Rich. This is gonna. I've already received a handful of texts, so there'll be support in tweet and posting form for your sentiment, undoubtedly. Well done.
I hope I didn't get over the top.
No, it's great.
Too passionate, but
it's great. You can't be too passionate.
Well, this is what happens when you spend 4 hours a day in a car.
Yeah, and there's little horses running around in your head. That's the problem, exactly, right?
It is. I mean, it's so funny because this is the stuff I think of when I'm commuting. And then, like, when I'm hiking, I actually start thinking of ways to, present our game. I'll be up in the mountains hiking, and I'll go, wow, you know what? This is a great way to talk about this particular kind of instance and make people understand it. Like, say things in a way that maybe they haven't heard it before, but it might click. That's all I do. Like, I'm constantly thinking of ways to present our game and educate. And I think, again, we've talked about it, on our Mondays on the radio here. It's a responsibility, and we have an opportunity because we have a platform that we need to embrace and take serious. So, again, I'm constantly thinking about it. And, Steve, like, I joke about it all the time, but it's reality. I finished the eighth grade. I went to 3 months of ninth grade. I never went back to school. I went, to Hialeah with Mr. DeMauro Stable. I went to the University of Belmont Park, I like to say. So some guy came up with some nonsense yesterday that basically calling me out about my vocabulary. I worked very hard over the years. Mr. DeMauro even used to tell me, make sure, I had a dictionary because I was a kid when I got to them and I didn't have much formal education. So I constantly was looking things up and you try to come up with ways of saying things without being redundant or saying in the same way. And this guy kind of like was really, again, negative. I probably should have just blocked him. So in response, I put up something on Twitter last night, and then the guy took his thing down and he disappeared. I can't even find him on Twitter. But, somebody, I guess, just wanted to be a prick. Excuse me.
Yeah. Well, there's no shortage of that. You don't have to worry about that.
Yeah. But anyway, I've taken enough of your time.
No, you're brilliant. No, we got a lot done. We got a lot. We covered some of the weekend, and we got a little bit of Oaks. We got the draw set, and I sent that out, and everybody's circulating it. And we will get you with a Derby and Oaks selection, and, of course, America's Day at the Races, including the card tomorrow here at Churchill, which is good as it happens, including the you got the one of the overnight stakes as we wade into the action. Basically, I thought from races 5 through 9, the late pick 5 tomorrow, a maiden special, and then a first level allowance on the grass, second level allowance going 3/4. Then there's the mile and a half stake on the main track, and then a 40 claimer that ends the sequence. So a nice pick 5 tomorrow. It's the Isaac Murphy, actually, tomorrow, the first Isaac Murphy.
And actually, I'm on for that. That's the whole part of the show I'm on, the late pick 5. So I printed out my PPs. Actually, Bailey Gallison, who works with us at Niagara, who does an amazing job, like everybody there behind the scenes, she printed everything out for me. I honestly have not dug into it. I'm going to go hiking, going to come back and dig into it tonight, and I'll be back down at Belmont tomorrow.
Attaboy, Rich Migliori, everybody. Follow him, Richard Migliori, and wish Joseph good luck on those purchases at OBS last week.
Yeah, he got some stuff done. Got one for a good friend of mine, Jess Iglesias. Got one for Rob Masiello, which Steve and Rocco. He was in love with that Frosted Philly. He was so thrilled. And nice. he's talking about time in a car. He's been driving back and forth to Ocala. And he'll go down there, spend a week, 10 days, drive back. I mean, that's a drive.
Yeah, that's a schlep. And in fact, tell him next time I'll give him a few pushes along the way.
Okay. All right. See, listen, have a great day. Say hi to everybody down there for me. I'll talk to you soon.
You got it. Rich Migliori, everybody. We'll catch up with the lightning round of Derby and Oak selections with Mig later in the week. Right now, we got about 5, 6, 7 minutes to close out. I wanted to get up to Farmington and get in the opening advance work for Finger Lakes. Finger Lakes kicking off the season and seemingly in position for a good season. Austin Reed joins us from the Finger Lakes HVPA. And Austin, best wishes to everybody for the meet. Good morning.
Yeah, a lot of excitement up here. Sun's out, and we're ready for a nice card today and excited to try to get back to some sort of normalcy around here.
Give us the thumbnail, first of all, on the details, because it's a long season, basically April, you know, to Thanksgiving, essentially.
Yeah, we're looking to run 102 days this year, and starting today on the 26th and going all the way to the day before Thanksgiving. Our VLTs are doing very well with the stimulus money, which allowed us to get a 15% purse increase. And we're looking to draw a few horses out of Tampa and some more horses out of Canada that might not be able to race at Woodbine. And with the purse increase, and our stakes program's back this year. So a lot of positivity. A lot of people have been asking about the racing fans. The governor still has us listed as like a stadium, like Buffalo Bill Stadium. So we're doing a few changes to be able to let horse racing fans in live here as well as NYRA. So we expect live fans within 2 weeks. Owners and trainers can come watch your horses run live. We're very lucky. President Chris Vaccaro and our board members have worked very hard this winter to get some sort of normalcy back. And we've kept the pandemic off our backside, and fingers crossed we're ready to move forward with a lot of good racing this year.
Nice. One thing too that you're able to do is restore the headline stakes programs, the Futurity and the New York Oaks, the New York Derby, and of course the Derby in particular feeds right into the Big Apple Triple.
That's true. We're very excited to be right next to Saratoga. 2.5 hour drive down the road, so we get a lot of nice horses that come out of Saratoga for our New York Derby, our New York Oaks, as well as our Lady Fingers, Aspirant, and Futurity. They're all big big pots that draw in the NYRA horsemen. So there's a lot of excitement to bring in those stakes back. And we've been very fortunate. A lot of our horsemen have done very well in the Aqueduct Circuit this winter, and they're bringing home a lot of fresh horses. So we're pretty excited for competitive race cards.
What's the schedule going to be in terms of days of the week running? Because I know there was some, there was plenty of debate about what the best schedule would work, in terms of simulcast.
So we're starting with today, and we're going to race 3 days next week, 3 days the following week, and then get into 4 day weeks, probably after Saratoga, based on the horses on our backside. We have scheduled 102 days. We are running Monday, Tuesday, Wednesdays, and Thursdays after Saratoga. Obviously when other tracks are closed, we are doing very well on our signal. And if that's the right thing to raise purses 15%, then our board of directors and Finger Lakes Racetrack thought that was great to run while other tracks were closed. So it would definitely be a Monday, Tuesday, then Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then we'll throw some Thursdays in there after Saratoga all the way to Thanksgiving.
How about what's the betting menu? Any changes to the wagering menu at all?
No, we have roughly the same as last year. I believe they're really big in the pick five. We'll have the carryover. Everything should be the same. They're open to changes, but the best one is the pick five. I think the pick five and the pick four have done really well in the past, And from what they're hearing out of Ohio and Las Vegas, those are the ones that they want to make sure stay in. So the takeouts are the same. Not many changes there. Just trying to get back to live racing fans.
Well, soon enough. And the most important patron that has to, you know, get in through the gates is Bill Coker, Judge Coker. We got to make sure, because I'm sure he's driving his wife crazy. So we want Bill to be able to spend afternoons out of the house.
He will cut the ribbon as the first racing fan into the building.
Nice. I love it. Austin, best of luck to everybody. I was looking at the first cards, and pretty much. Everybody we're used to seeing, my man Mike Lissesi and Engelharts and so forth, Debbie Breed, and they're all the familiar faces. Carl Grossmark, and the riding colony looks familiar, and I hope it's a great meet, and we'll check in periodically. And if there's anything you need me to communicate, feel free. Finger Lakes does a great job. If you've never been there, it's a pretty little plant, and if you're heading east or west across the thruway, get off in Farmington and visit Finger Lakes. Austin, best of luck.
Much appreciated, Steve, and we'll hope to see you this summer.
Absolutely. Austin Reed, everybody, and the Finger Lakes HBPA. And purses are nice. Maidens are running for $29,000. Which is great. It's a nice number at Flakes. If your horse can't, if you can't win at Belmont the next few weeks, think about going up to the Flakes. This was a fast morning and really kind of fun to start the day with two Derby participants in Elliott Walden and Windstar, and Terry Finley and West Point. And in addition, we had other topics to discuss with them, particularly the two fabulous three-year-old debuts of West Point's and Partners. And I want to thank Meg as well, the Oak Straw. Back with you tomorrow. 9 o'clock right here, Churchill Downs. Thanks, everybody.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.